It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Long before we're Democrats or Republicans, or Americans.
Day one of what supporters are hoping will be a straight shot to the Supreme Court for Judge Neil Gorsuch. And it's clear that Democrats are still frustrated by the fact that President Obama's nominee, Judge Merrick Garland, never made it this far.
Judge Garland was denied a hearing, and this vacancy has been in place for well over a year. I just want to say I am deeply disappointed that it's under these circumstances that we begin our hearings.
Round one went first to statements by the 20 members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, some praising Gorsuch's resume and record.
What I want is a cross between Socrates and Dirty Harry. And I believe you just might be that person.
Others using their time to criticize the president.
The independence of those judges has never been more threatened and never more important. A large part of the threat comes from the man who nominated you.
When Gorsuch last faced Senate confirmation in 2006, he was approved unanimously by a simple voice vote. There was no recorded opposition back then from senators including Chuck Schumer, Dianne Feinstein, and Dick Durbin. Many Democrats say this time around is different, given that Gorsuch now has a decade-long judicial record, including favorable positions for both Hobby Lobby and the Little Sisters of the Poor when those groups challenged the Obamacare contraception mandate.
You may not like the view he has of the law, but I'm dying to hear somebody over there tell me why he's not qualified to be sitting here when a Republican president occupies down the street.
Gorsuch spoke fondly of Justice Scalia today, recounting their fly fishing adventures and noting that his mentor reminded him it's his job to follow the words of a law, not to replace them.
Sometimes the answers we reach aren't the ones we personally prefer. Sometimes the answers follow us home at night and keep us up. But the answers we reach are always the ones we believe the law requires.
All right, that was Shannon Bream on Fox, and that was the voice of Neil Gorsuch, which is interesting to me. I was just thinking, you know, if he gets the nomination, that's the last time. These hearings this week will probably be the last time any of us will ever hear his voice, unless you are in the chambers of the Supreme Court. It's funny because they have to go silent. This is Sandy Rios in the morning, and it's a pleasure to join you this morning. So much happened yesterday, as you well know, between the FBI director testifying on the House side and then Neil Gorsuch testifying on Senate side. These are momentous times. And then, of course, the health care plan is due to be voted on Thursday morning. So there's a lot going on. But I want first for us to turn to Neil Gorsuch because certainly we can acknowledge intellectually that everything, almost every issue we're talking about, boils down to the courts. We can also probably agree that the courts are out of control. We saw that judge in Hawaii, unelected judge in Hawaii, good friend of Barack Obama, stop the second executive order to make our country safe by more better forms of vetting, restricting countries that are associated with some of the worst kinds of terrorism. And that's not going to happen now, not for a while, because of one judge. And so what happens in that Senate hearing is very important to all Americans. I've asked Phil Jauregui to join me. Phil is the president of Judicial Action Group, and I know he watched the hearing and with rapt attention. He's an expert. I'm so grateful he's joining us this morning. Good morning, Philip.
Good morning, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Were there any moments or exchanges in yesterday's hearing that stood out to you?
There was. Interestingly, it didn't come from anyone on the Republican side or from the nominee, Gorsuch. It came from Dianne Feinstein, who's the ranking Senate Democrat on the committee. And it was pretty shocking because when she made her opening statement, Judge Gorsuch was sitting there, and of course he wasn't responding to her at that time yesterday. He'll respond today but she was talking to him, and she was talking about originalism. And it's the first time I've heard that I can remember in a Senate hearing a senator, much less the ranking member, take someone to task for originalism. And what she did was she opposed originalism and argued in favor of a living Constitution theory. And she even spoke the words that the Constitution is living. And this is something, this is a debate that we really have won, Sandy. I mean, many on the other side no longer oppose the idea that the law means what it says it means. But Feinstein did. And for her to do that, I don't know why she did. And it was a bit shocking. So we're seeing a real contrast here between what we believe and really what the Constitution says and what liberals want, which they don't want to follow the Constitution. They want judges to just rewrite it. And you know, so that was the big thing that stuck out to me.
That's amazing. I did not hear that anywhere. You know,
yeah.
Let me just point out, this reminds me a great deal of the kinds of phrases and wording that the left used to put a positive spin on something terrible, like we're pro-choice, meaning you're in favor of killing babies. Well, okay, living Constitution means it can mean whatever you want it to mean. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg is one of the strong proponents of a living Constitution, is she not?
She is, and really a better way to put it is dead Constitution, because what they mean is whatever the Constitution says, we're not going to follow it. It's dead to us as liberals, and we're going to write a new one over it, not properly the way the Constitution is supposed to be amended, but we're going to get activist judges to just make stuff up and call it the Constitution.
You know, Phil, we've talked about Neil Gorsuch, you and I, before, and it's one thing to evaluate a person's judicial history, and that's been interesting, but it's different to hear them speak. So when you heard him yesterday in that hearing, what were your impressions?
Well, I have to tell you that, you know, I may not go into my concerns. I think his judicial record is excellent, but every time I hear him speak, I just like him. Now, you know, we're not supposed to be emotional. We're not supposed to be, you know, just listen to somebody, but you know, the personal impression I get from him is incredibly positive, and I think people saw that when he was introduced by the president and nominated, and the same was true yesterday. Now, you know, we're not just saying these are our personal impressions, whether we, quote, like somebody or not. That can be very shallow, but you stack that up, too, against his judicial record and things that he has written and said about the Constitution and originalism. And now you really start to get some substance. But just on a personal level, I think he's very likable.
You know, Carrie Severino was my guest yesterday. She wrote an article in Real Clear Politics. I love Carrie. And I actually asked her about this, too, but I want to ask you about it. She says that Democrats complain that Judge Gorsuch's textualist approach to the law, by which he interprets law according to their plain meaning as written, makes him a judicial radical. In fact, Judge Gorsuch clearly swims in the mainstream of American jurisprudence. According to one study, 98% of the opinions he wrote for the Tenth Circuit had been unanimous, even though that court tilts to the left. Okay, that to me is good and bad news. Phil, I don't know if I'm misunderstanding that, but we want him to be a textualist. But is it a good sign that 98% of the opinions were concurred with a court that leans to the left?
Well, I think you'd have to look at each case to see. I mean, I'm with you. That concerns me just as a statistic. You know, just like every time you hear people say, well, oh, Obama's Solicitor General thinks that Gorsuch is wonderful. We think, okay, well, that may be convincing to some moderates and Democrats, but as a conservative, that concerns me a wee bit, you know? So, you know, the statistic sounds great from a moderate public standpoint, but I think to really critique it, we would have to get into individual decisions. And having looked at his individual decisions, Sandy, his decisions are excellent. Now, I haven't read every decision he's ever issued. Those are in the thousands, but the ones that I've read and looked through are really good. He writes well. He's made good decisions. And that is the best indicator of the type of judge he'll be. You know, we can talk about everything else, but when you want to know what kind of a justice will someone be, the best evidence you have is to look at their judicial record.
You know, I'm curious, and you may not know the answer to this, but it seems only in my recent memory, like, well, with Clarence Thomas, I don't know if it went back to Bork. I can't, honestly, I wasn't as involved then as I am now.
Right.
But when do we get to the point where justices can't have an opinion on anything, and it's better to nominate someone who actually doesn't even have a record on anything in particular? You know what
yeah.
I mean? It's like they have to be a blank slate in order to be
yeah.
nominated.
Well, I think a lot of that goes to the hearings and the game that's played there because, you know, in truth, if they're going to be hearing a case about a certain subject, you know, they can't talk about that subject beforehand and telegraph how they would rule before they ever rule. Then it would seem that they're biased or they've, quote, already made up their mind. And so that's one thing that occurs. They want to stay away from certain subjects that could come before the court. But what they end up doing, too, is kind of using that as a little bit of a shield to say, well, I don't want to go into all these subjects that could come up, and it can become really an excuse. And, you know, and then that plays out in other ways as well, I think.
You know, I have to say, because I'm suspicious, the left is not fighting this nomination like they normally fight. You know, they're not spending
yeah.
the money.
Yeah.
They're not being as vitriolic. And that actually, Philip, makes me nervous. How about you?
Well, yes, but there's a strategy behind that, I think. And here's what I think they're thinking. And some of it has even been spoken. But, you know, here, from an ideological perspective, there are 9 members of the court. You know, 5 is really the magic number because that's the number you need to really own the court, to be in the majority. 3 votes is not a big deal. 4 votes is not a big deal. Once you get to 6, 7, 8, it doesn't matter. The magic number is 5. And they see Gorsuch as a replacement for Scalia. And so Scalia was so very conservative that even if Gorsuch were as conservative as Scalia, there's not a net change on the court. And I think what they're most concerned about is the next vacancy. Because if Anthony Kennedy goes, which is what a lot of people think, Kennedy is not a conservative, at least not on social issues, life, marriage, these types of big issues for social conservatives. He's an absolute liberal. And so if Kennedy goes, then his replacement would be a massive net change, not just for one seat, but for the court, because it would take us from 4 to 5 votes. Now, if they oppose Gorsuch and lose, and they think they will lose no matter what happens, and our side then uses the nuclear option and blows up the filibuster, then when Kennedy's seat comes along, we're in a much stronger position, and the liberals are in a much weaker position. So I hope I've explained that well. It's kind of tough to talk about all the inside baseball, but there are a lot of reasons, a lot of strategic reasons why it would be smart for them to go easy on Gorsuch, knowing they need to save their fire for the next nominee.
Okay, well, that makes sense. And actually, that makes me feel better. Me, who always looks for the angle here. You know, Phil, all right, we only have a minute left. So I want, what else do you want to communicate
yeah.
to us about this nomination?
Yeah, I think here's honestly how I'm praying today. And I've been praying it for a long time. These hearings concern me when nominees come before the court and play a game of words. And sometimes they dance a little too much and try to get too cute. And they say things that spiritually, these can end up being vows that they make. And so my prayer for Judge Gorsuch today is that, as the Bible says, that he would be quick to listen, as in quick to listen to the Holy Spirit, and that he would then be slow to speak and slow to anger, and that he would not say things or make vows that are going to haunt him in the days and months and years to come.
Oh, kind of like a Sessions recusal from an important case.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah.
All
yeah.
right. Philip Jaguri. Thank you, Philip. It's always a pleasure. Judicial Action Group. We'll talk again soon.
Sounds great. Thanks, Andy.
All right. Thank you. All right. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the hearings that in the House where the FBI director testified. Did you watch that? This was pretty amazing. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. Thank you.
A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is an excellent way to provide yourself with guaranteed permanent income while at the same time supporting the American Family Association. Here's what one supporter told us.
I very much want to see God's word continue into the next generation. This is a way I can help AFA spread the truth and promote their biblical stand. My experience with the AFA Foundation continues to remind me that I have a small part in helping AFA in the battle for our nation's values.
Financial planning is essential to your family. A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is one way you can support AFA and the health of our nation. The planners at the AFA Foundation are here to help you do the most with your finances. You can call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345, find us on Facebook, or email foundation@afa.net, and learn whether a charitable gift annuity is right for you.
From Samaritan's Purse and Franklin Graham comes Facing Darkness. In 2014, as the Ebola virus was devastating West Africa,
the numbers of new cases and deaths are still rising.
International relief organization Samaritan's Purse stepped up.
God has called us to care for the dying, to care for those that are suffering.
We can't say we're Samaritan's Purse and not help.
My phone rang. One of our doctors, Kent Brantley, has Ebola.
And then David looked at me and he said, "You too have Ebola."
We're there to save life. We're there in your name. Why?
Despite the fact that things were out of control, we knew that God was in control.
God puts you in places and supplies the strength to deal with.
Jesus Christ didn't run. We run to the fire. We don't run away from it.
Facing Darkness, a true story of faith. In select cinemas for one night only, Thursday, March 30th. For theaters and tickets, go to facingdarknessmovie.com. That's facingdarknessmovie.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Students at Dinwiddie High School in Virginia were ordered to remove American flags flying from their truck beds. The students did as they were told, but word soon spread about the school's unpatriotic behavior. Local residents complained, and television station WIRC investigated. The school said it was a safety issue, but later had a change of heart and told the kids to fly their flags. So first, I want to salute the reporters at WRIC. Thanks to their fair and balanced journalism, a wrong was righted. It's nice to see some real news instead of fake news. But most of the credit goes to the good citizens of Dinwiddie County, Virginia. The gun-toting, Bible-clinging, flag-waving, deplorable Americans took a stand. And as I wrote in my new book, The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again, when patriots take a stand, we can make a difference. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
By any standard, the FBI director's confirmation of an ongoing counterintelligence investigation was extraordinary.
I have been authorized by the Department of Justice to confirm that the FBI is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere, and that includes any links with the Trump campaign and the Russian government, and whether there was any coordination between the campaign and Russia's efforts.
The committee's senior Democrat drew connections based on circumstantial evidence and media reports between former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort, political advisor Roger Stone, businessman Carter Page, and Moscow.
It is also possible, maybe more than possible, that they are not coincidental, not disconnected, and not unrelated.
The White House spokesman shot back.
I think it's fine to look into it, but at the end of the day, they're going to come to the same conclusion that everybody else has had.
As the committee's Republican chairman emphasized, Russian hacking did not impact the tallies in swing states.
Director Comey, do you have any evidence at the FBI that any votes were changed in the states that I mentioned to Admiral Rogers?
No.
And Nunez pressed the FBI director to investigate if Democrats crossed the line.
They have ties to Russian intelligence services, Russian agents. Would that be something of interest to you?
The FBI director said the Russians believed Hillary Clinton would win, and the hacking was designed to damage her presidency.
That they wanted to hurt our democracy, hurt her, help him.
Well, that's the first part of Catherine's report. Oh, man, I have so much to say, but let's listen to the rest of her report before I say it. Catherine again.
The FBI director said there is no evidence to support President Trump's wiretapping allegations.
With respect to the president's tweets about alleged wiretapping directed at him by the prior administration, I have no information that supports those tweets.
On allegations that President Obama ordered wiretaps on the Trump team,
no president could.
The NSA director said there is no basis for the claim the Obama administration instructed British intelligence to spy on the Trump campaign.
Have you seen any evidence that anyone else in the Obama administration made such a request?
No, sir.
On the unmasking of Americans whose communications were swept up during surveillance of foreign targets, including former National Security Advisor Mike Flynn, the NSA director said less than two dozen people have that authority. Republicans blame former Obama administration officials for leaking Flynn's name after a December 2016 conversation with the Russian ambassador about sanctions.
Do you know whether Director Clapper knew the name of the U.S. citizen that appeared in the New York Times and Washington Post? Would Director Brennan have access to an unmasked U.S. citizen's name? Would National Security Advisor Susan Rice have access to an unmasked U.S. citizen's name?
Both the FBI and NSA directors testified that leaking an American's name is a serious federal crime, but they only hinted at the existence of a criminal leak investigation.
Catherine Herridge of Fox, and this is Sandy Rios back with you. Okay, so what's going on here? The FBI director, James Comey, is testifying, called by the House Intelligence Committee, and we're going to comment on each of at least a few of his comments directly in a second. But here's the story. Remember that Trump's Justice Department, the Justice Department is over the FBI. FBI is part of justice. The Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, has recused himself. The Assistant Attorney General has yet to be confirmed. So the person in charge of this is an Obama appointee. And let me remind you that James Comey did what he could, at least what he did in the election, comported to help Hillary Clinton. That's all we can say. We know that Hillary Clinton's email scandal was huge, that the breach of information, the national security involved, we know that the Clinton Foundation was so incredibly corrupt, and yet James Comey comes out and makes this big statement and then declines to press charges or continue the investigation. But here, he's, whatever he says, all I can say is, whatever position he takes always comports to the aid of the left and the harm of the right. That's the way I see it. And, the problem is that Attorney General Sessions has no control over this because he's recused himself. And so we have a serious problem because I don't think that James Comey is an honest person. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand that he is somehow able to say a lot of things that are not necessarily true. Now, let me just say, very carefully crafted, they say that there's no evidence of wiretap. Well, as we have explained, wiretap is an outdated technology. The better term, the accurate term now, surveillance, which is much more broad, has nothing to do with the ancient method of going in and tapping a wire. So it's very simple to say there was no wiretap. Trump and people of, our generation would say wiretap because that's the way we understand it. So there's no evidence of wiretap, declares Comey. And yet he goes on to say that the Trump political team is under investigation. He continues to say that, even though we were told, were we not, that the assistant to the FBI director talked to Reince Priebus about 3 weeks ago in the White House and told him in no uncertain terms there was no evidence of any collusion with the campaign. In fact, Mike Morrell, who is a Hillary Clinton operative, he's very close to her. CIA chief, former Michael Morrell, James Clapper, who's the former Defense Intelligence Agency, both said have said publicly in no uncertain terms that there's no evidence of collusion between Trump and the associates and associates in Russia. Now, they have nothing to gain. They're not friends. James Clapper, I would argue, is also partisan. But they both said that publicly. But now suddenly the FBI director is stoking the fires again, saying, oh, yes, we're investigating, you know, connections. What more is there to be said about the Trump campaign? I mean, don't they know they have Paul Manafort, they have Roger Stone. They've been away from the campaign since early on. And so the fires have been stoked. But I want to go back and talk about some of these some of these clips that we got yesterday, because I want to comment on them. This is number 8, Comey on the wiretapping.
With respect to the president's tweets about alleged wiretapping directed at him by the prior administration, I have no information that supports those tweets, and we have looked carefully inside the FBI. The Department of Justice has asked me to share with you that the answer is the same for the Department of Justice and all its components. The department has no information that supports those tweets.
That means nothing. Because Larry Johnson was my guest when I was hosting for Tony Perkins for Washington Watch last week. If some of you heard that, Larry Johnson's a former CIA operative. And what he explained is that according to his sources inside the CIA, it wasn't that the president, President Obama, did not go through normal channels. He didn't go through the CIA. He didn't go through Justice, which is what Comey keeps saying. Yeah, well, obviously, he didn't go to the Justice Department and ask for Trump Tower to be wiretapped or surveilled. But according to Larry Johnson, there were other ways of doing that. And, of course, Larry said that they went through British intelligence, which is HDHQ. You heard probably Judge Andrew Napolitano talk about that, too. Of course, the British are saying, oh, no, that's ridiculous. But they're not going to come forward and say, why, yes, we are surveilling, you know, your leaders. They're not going to do that. So I'm just telling you that the fact that Comey said that we haven't found anything in Justice or the FBI means nothing. It means nothing. All right, so this is Comey's comments on Donald Trump's allegations. Let's listen, cut 7.
As you know, our practice is not to confirm the existence of ongoing investigations, especially those investigations that involve classified matters. But in unusual circumstances, where it is in the public interest, it may be appropriate to do so, as Justice Department policies recognize. This is one of those circumstances. I have been authorized by the Department of Justice to confirm that the FBI, as part of our counterintelligence mission, is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. And that includes investigating the nature of any links between individuals associated with the Trump campaign and the Russian government, and whether there was any coordination between the campaign and Russia's efforts. As with any counterintelligence investigation, this will also include an assessment of whether any crimes were committed. Because it is an open, ongoing investigation and is classified, I cannot say more about what we are doing and whose conduct we are examining. At the request of congressional leaders, we have taken the extraordinary step, in coordination with the Department of Justice, of briefing this Congress's leaders, including the leaders of this committee, in a classified setting, in detail about the investigation. But I can't go into those details here.
You know, I just read an article last week that I don't think I shared with you about an operation against conservative members of the House of Representatives. And it was led by Obama and his operatives. And the way they did it was Nancy Pelosi introduced a measure in the House of Representatives when she was the speaker, which allowed for anonymous sources to accuse members of the House of terrible things. And they could remain anonymous, and then they would come under investigation. And the way they would do part of this is that they would plant stories in the hometowns, you know, out in the heartland of America, of these terrible stories, which were, I don't know, maybe there was some truth and maybe there was no truth. I don't know, but depend on the congressman, I guess. Something horrible. Sometimes it would just be totally made up. And then someone would bring that article to Congress and anonymously accuse the congressman. These are conservatives. And then they would be in a fight for their life behind the scenes. They'd have to spend so much money to try to defend themselves. And oftentimes they were defeated in their own district because they didn't have enough resources to fight. And of course, the investigation, they used the Justice Department to do this. The Justice Department would investigate this one thing, which would lead to another thing, which would lead to another thing. And that's why a lot of conservatives dropped off the face of the map or became quiet. So this is something that the Obama administration did. But of course, the president of the United States, former, would not, he would never, surveil Donald Trump, who was running for president, would he? He wouldn't do that. Why, that's just appalling and shocking. It isn't appalling and shocking. It seems to be a pattern as far as I'm concerned, and I do not believe the FBI director, and I think we're in big trouble. Let me play Devin Nunes is the Republican chair of this committee, and he asks, well, just what evidence do you have about the Russians tampering with the vote? Cut 9.
So my question as of today, Admiral Rogers, do you have any evidence that Russia cyber actors changed vote tallies in the state of Michigan?
No, I do not. But I would highlight we're a foreign intelligence organization, not a domestic intelligence organization. So it would be fair to say we are probably not the best organization to provide a more complete answer.
How about the state of Pennsylvania?
No, sir.
The state of Wisconsin?
No, sir.
State of Florida?
No, sir.
The state of North Carolina?
No, sir.
The state of Ohio?
No, sir.
So you have no intelligence that suggests or evidence that suggests any votes were changed?
I have nothing generated by the National Security Agency, sir.
Director Comey, do you have any evidence at the FBI that any votes were changed in the states that I mentioned to Admiral Rogers?
No.
Thank you.
All right, so interesting interaction. Now, this really was interesting. I haven't heard anyone really talk about this except for Mark Stein. I'm going to play his comments in a second. This is number 11. This is like getting inside the minds of the Russians and telling us what they had in mind for the election. Let's listen.
Let me begin by asking you, do you think that the Russians expected Secretary Clinton to win the election?
Yes, as of August, certainly. August, September.
Okay, Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Comey, you indicated as of August, September. Do you believe they ever came to a conclusion that, you know what, Mr. Trump's going to win?
No, the assessment of the intelligence community was that early on, they thought he might have a shot. And so they wanted to mess with our election, hurt our country in general. That's always the baseline. They hated her, Secretary Clinton, wanted to harm her, and thought it might have a chance to help Mr. Trump, and then later concluded that Mr. Trump, it was hopeless, and they would focus then on just trying to undermine Secretary Clinton, especially with the European allies.
Got that. So up until summer and through the fall, they believed that Secretary Clinton would win. Is that true?
Yeah, I think the assessment was late in the summer, they concluded, based on the polling I think a lot of people were reading, that Mr. Trump didn't have a chance, and they shifted to just focusing on just trying to undermine her.
Just exactly how does FBI Director Comey know all of these things about how the Russians felt about Mrs. Clinton? And, you know, I have to tell you, it defies logic to say that the Russians hated Mrs. Clinton. Now, they might not have liked her personally. I don't doubt that at all. But Mrs. Clinton is much more friendly operative to the Russians. The Clintons always were. Than Donald Trump would eventually be on the issues of national security. Are you kidding me? And so I don't think I have time to play this last clip. In fact, I will take a break in a second. I have a national security expert, Mike Waller, who's joining us in just a second. And I'll save the clip. Mark Stein actually talked about it last night on Tucker Carlson. And as only Mark Stein can, puts a little humor into it. And he's talking about how we're making the Russians to sound like some kind of a romanticized villain, Putin, and that they have more power than they actually have. And it really is an amazing thing to watch. And did you hear how Comey was kind of offended that they didn't like Mrs. Clinton? I'm sorry. I'm jaded. Yes, I am. I think that Director Comey has an opinion, political opinion, and I think he's doing everything he can to advance that. And I think that no one can stop him because Sessions has recused himself, which is just tragic. I'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. We'll be right back.
American Family Radio, equipping you to change the culture.
About 6 years ago, thanks to AFR, I got the courage to found a school called Hunter Country Day School, which has a mission to challenge the mind, nourish the spirit, and develop the whole child. We are founded for the glory of God and for the health of the family. And we are in our fourth year now. And throughout the entire process of founding the school and hiring the faculty, getting the curriculum, finding the equipment, finding the place, recruiting families, everything, I have turned to AFR. And keep up the good work. You're an inspiration to me daily. And your mission is rippling out into families here in Richmond. Thanks.
Ensure that we impact even more lives by partnering with us during our three-day share-a-thon starting April 4th. Listener-supported American Family Radio. Boldly standing for truth for your family.
The financial world certainly can be intimidating, and our livelihood, of course, depends upon it, but God is in control of all things. Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. I take your calls every day and give you answers from a biblical perspective and break down the day's financial numbers to help keep you informed. Financial Issues, every weekday morning at 8 o'clock Central Time and Saturday mornings, 10 o'clock Central Time on American Family Radio.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters, hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi, all throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but he is great. Be a part of something unique. 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Trump administration just reminded federal judges second-guessing the president's decision to pause immigration from 6 countries awash with jihadism that it's a dangerous world out there. Now air travelers from 8 other nations tied to Sharia supremacism, the Islamic feedstock of jihad and terrorism, can't carry on large portable electronic equipment. Evidently, there's fresh reason to believe that our enemies seek to use laptops and the like to conceal bombs that could take down commercial airliners. Such a menace is a reminder of why the Constitution and Congress have invested in the president, not the courts, the authority to determine who should be allowed into the United States. Judges typically lack the national security experience, let alone the latest intelligence needed properly to evaluate the threats we face and, wherever possible, to keep them from doing us harm. Support President Trump at immigrationpause.org. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Well, I think they're mad at Russia because they want to believe that they did not lose the election, that somebody stole it from them. And that's why what we saw today, frankly, was nuts. I mean, the Democrats, as you said, they've turned Putin into a Bond villain. The man with the spider's touch, as that Congresswoman almost sang today. They're two sound bites from insisting that they're going to build a new Berlin Wall and get Russia to pay for it. This is going nowhere for them. It's a massive head fake. And if you did subscribe seriously to the theory that Putin was trying to mess with America. What do we have now? We have an interminable investigation that is designed to drag down the United States government. This investigation, this furor, is actually doing Putin's bidding more than having some cabinet secretary in his pocket would. So today's hearings were bizarre in a very particular way. And when someone like Comey says, you know, oh, Vladimir Putin absolutely hates Hillary Clinton, what business is that of a domestic law enforcement agency? Why is the FBI wasting its time trying to figure out what Vladimir Putin thinks of some washed-up has-been presidential candidate?
Mark Stein, as only Mark Stein can say it, he was on with Tucker Carlson last night. And I think he's right. I do. But I'm not the national security expert. My next guest is Michael Waller, is right now the vice president of governmental affairs for the Center for Security Policy, which is where all the good people go, as far as I'm concerned. Mike was a Walter, maybe is, a Walter and Leonora Annenberg professor of international communication at the Institute of World Politics. He's a graduate of the School of National Security and International Affairs in Washington and the author of Fighting the War of Ideas. And he joins us this morning for the first time. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you, Sandy.
Well, I feel like just being quiet and asking you what you thought. I've said a lot before you joined me this morning. I really just not going to tip your hand. What did you think about the FBI director's testimony before that committee yesterday?
Well, the FBI was correct to say what he was legally able to say, and he was, but he was also set up to say little tiny bits of information that really could not be substantiated. And as I know from having worked with the FBI for a very long time, just because they're investigating something doesn't mean they have found anything. And there was almost nothing in Comey's testimony to say they had really found anything yet.
You know, Michael, he emphasized that there was no, inside the Justice Department, and we've looked carefully in the FBI, there's just no evidence that that President Donald Trump was wiretapped. There's no evidence. But my point is that, well, I don't really think anybody really thinks, who knows anything about this, that the FBI would be surveilling or wiretapping Trump Tower, and that if it happened, it was another entity. So really, that was a denial that was not significant either. Would you agree?
Right, and the assumption seems to be that it was a government agency that was doing the eavesdropping. So there would be a paper trail and an electron trail and all of these other trails that you could follow if people were going according to procedure. But really, some of the best eavesdropping takes place with commercially available technology by private companies that are in the business of eavesdropping, and you'll never find out who they are.
Well, the thing that really that I just don't understand is how they can gloss over. We know for a fact that the conversation of Michael Flynn with the Russian ambassador not only was taped, there was a transcript. It was distributed across intelligence agencies. It was distributed to the Washington Post, the CNN, and others. Somebody was surveilling Michael Flynn, who, as I understand it, was in Trump Tower. So why is it a quantum leap to think that that same entity might not be surveilling the president?
That's right. If they're surveilling his national security advisor, they're surveilling the president. And that's where you have the breaking of the law. Because in a place like New York, it's illegal to eavesdrop on people. And if it was a government agency, it's a crime to leak the information from a surveilled conversation. So either way, you have other people breaking a crime, and really no one seems to be interested on the critic side in who's been doing that.
You know, the thing that, yeah, this is the thing that bothers me. The head of the FBI, in his testimony yesterday, defied the expectations, I think, even of the left. In fact, I just read an article that, I'll just read the headline. Key Democratic officials now warning base not to expect evidence of Trump-Russia collusion. Now, this came out before the hearing, and there's a reason for that, because Mike Morrell, who is very close to Mrs. Clinton, former CIA chief, and James Clapper, former Obama Defense Intelligence Agency head, both said In unequivocal terms, there was no evidence. And we also know that the assistant to the FBI director allegedly, reportedly, made the same claim to Reince Priebus in the White House, that we found nothing. And yet, the FBI director announces yesterday that we're continuing to investigate this corroboration between the Trump campaign and the Russian authorities. What's that all about?
Well, again, even Comey said they're continuing to investigate, but they have still found nothing. That was one of the key takeaways from his testimony. What this is it's a few things. First of all, the FBI, by law, has to investigate counterintelligence issues where it thinks it may have them. And unfortunately, with some of the Trump campaign people who did have businesses over in the Russia space, and they had some colossally bad judgment, those things do need to be investigated, and that's all legitimate. But that doesn't mean they had influence on Trump's policymaking, let alone on Trump winning the election, because Trump fired them last summer, right about the time the investigations began. So rather than slamming Trump, Trump should be credited with getting rid of those problem people early on, as soon as the FBI began its investigation. I didn't see that in the headlines.
Yeah, I know. It's just I'm sorry. I just don't trust James Comey. I think that his public statements, both during the presidential campaign and now, always, for whatever reason, comport to the benefit of the left, not to people on the right. Now, that may just be accidental.
Well, yeah, and look at this too, Sandy. He was making these statements many, many months ago. Yet even now, in March 2017, under oath, he says, "Oh, we still don't have any evidence." Yet he's been hinting that there's evidence all along. So a lot of this is bureaucratic jockeying for political influence, which is unprecedented in the FBI over the past 40 years. It's crazy. It should never be tolerated.
Well, it's very.
And the second thing is, these investigations are often designed to be leaked. If you see some of the intelligence reports that made it into the media, this is the type of reports where analysts write them, senior officials rewrite analytical reports and word them in the appropriate way so they'll be catchy in the news media to design them to be leaked. They're not real, conclusive, forensic analytical reports.
Well, the other part about this, Mike, is we know that the Obama administration purposely spun up. I remember Jay Johnson, I think, was the first one who made a public statement about this and got the ball rolling that I knew about Russia's influence on the election. And I remember when he said it way back, I thought, what are they talking about? And then it occurred to me then, they're setting a trap. They are laying a groundwork in case Mrs. Clinton does not win. And so we know that Barack Obama in the last few months of his presidency, actually was very involved in getting information out as broadly as he could I think 20 people are supposed to know some of this surveillance information and names. And we understand it was distributed to a broader swath and then leaked to the press. So they were doubling down on this Russian narrative. And now it seems that Director Comey is continuing it without any kind of substance. Is that too harsh?
Well, the setup is completely accurate. I think Comey's stuck in a couple of ways. First of all, because he no longer deserves the public trust, given the unethical, if not illegal, ways in which he was himself trying to influence the American political campaign, which you could never have the FBI involved in meddling in politics either way. That's one thing. Second thing is, though, he is bound by law to investigate evidence. And these investigations, especially a counterintelligence investigation, as you mentioned, there was a counterintelligence investigation. These things stay open for years by their very nature. It's not like solving a crime, but it's detecting foreign spying and foreign intrigue. So the fact that a counterintelligence investigation has to be open for years and the fact that people are leaking this means that these leaks are going to continue for years, even if no evidence is found.
And yes, and that is the problem. And that does great damage to the Trump presidency. And then, of course, the real thing to me, the real issue here, and I think it's pretty plain that others feel the same way, is that somebody breached security by leaking Michael Flynn's name. And also, the thing that no one seems to be mentioning is Trump's own conversations with world leaders were taped and the transcripts leaked. You know, to the president of Mexico, who's doing that? And why isn't that the subject of the FBI's attention?
Yeah, that's a big mystery. And also, you know, exactly. Here you have total evidence. You have total proof that serious federal crimes have been committed by releasing recordings of the president's private conversations with foreign leaders. This is a crime under any circumstance, yet no one's demanding anybody's head for that type of a crime. And we don't know how much else of it is going on. We have to presume everything is up for grabs and up for sale right now, and that there are always going to be leaks. I think also there's another thing that we should be mindful of, and that is the FBI's technology is obsolete. It's just about always obsolete because of the time it takes bureaucracies to get new machinery. So whoever is doing the surveillance, it's probably not the FBI, but I would guess it's either a foreign intelligence service that's doing the leaks and then giving it to journalists and others to mess us up and lose confidence in our institutions and to make it impossible for our president to govern. Or it could be a private entity that is funded by wealthy opponents of Trump or by people allied with Barack Obama or George Soros type people to spy on officials throughout the government, again, to make the United States ungovernable under President Trump and to force him to either put in more moderate people who would be more pleasing to the George Soroses of the world or to make the country ungovernable.
Wow. Yeah, I believe that's what's happening, Mike. That's just what I see. Sometimes, you know, in the business that you're in, so much of what you assess is your gut. You're just your gut on this stuff. I had talked to Larry Johnson a couple of weeks ago, who was with the CIA. You may know his name. He's been featured on some broadcasts, and he was one of the agents, used to be more than an agent in the CIA. He is one of the ones that said it was British intelligence that issued the information on General Flynn and also is probably surveilling Donald Trump. Do you think that's possible?
Anything's possible. It could have been Russian intelligence. It could have been the Chinese. It could have been really anybody, or it could not have been an intelligence service at all. It could have been a Ben Rhodes related group. Really, if you're looking at who would benefit from this the most, some of our staunchest adversaries would benefit from this in terms of, say, the Russians. It's not the type of thing the Chinese are known to have done yet, so I would say my main suspects of this would be the Russians, who are playing this up in ways that will desensitize us to future Russian subversion of us. Or secondly, a privately funded group allied with Soros or Hillary or Obama.
Or both and. Yeah. Okay, well, that's me saying that, not you. Okay, Mike Waller, Vice President of the Center for Security Policy. Mike, it's nice to talk to you, and I hope that we can talk again. Thanks for joining us this morning and your great perspective. Thank you. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning. It's amazing, isn't it? Isn't it something? Well, we'll talk more about healthcare tomorrow because it's coming up for a vote Thursday morning and lots of things are happening. The president is meeting with the Republicans this morning about that. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.